That is the number to dial if you'd like to join a conversation about sexual harassment in the workplace. Today's edition of Legal Talk going to take us into the office and take a look at what sexual harassment is, what it looks like, how often it's happening, how often people are reporting it when it does happen, and very importantly, what companies should be doing to make sure it isn't happening in the first place, but secondly, to deal with it if it is reported. If those of you listening have personal experience with us you'd like to share with us, I would welcome your calls, your voice notes. Whether you've been there yourself and you want to tell us about what happened to you, whether you chose to report it, and if so, why? If not, why not? What your company did about it and what sort of consequences there were, I'd welcome that kind of story. Equally, I would welcome your comments on, if it was to happen to you, would you feel safe reporting it in your workplace and why? Do you know that your company has a policy for dealing with it? Have you seen that policy applied in action before to a level that would make you feel comfortable to step forward? Very interested to hear your thoughts. You can call in on 021-446-0567 or leave us a voice note on 072-567-1567. With me in studio is Samiksha Singh, who is a director in the employment practice at legal firm Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. Samiksha, lovely to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Pippa.
Let's start with the actual laws that apply here. Are there specific provisions in labor law which govern sexual harassment in the workplace, or is it covered by criminal law that would deal with sexual harassment full stop, or a bit of both perhaps?
So our employment legislation, and we have various pieces of legislation covering employment law in South Africa, in particular the Employment Equity Act, deals with the issues of harassment and in particular sexual harassment in the workplace. And sexual harassment is a form of unfair discrimination which is prohibited in the workplace. And the legislators have introduced the 2005 amended Code of Good Practice for sexual harassment cases, which sets out the test for sexual harassment and what should be done by organizations in terms of eliminating such conduct in the workplace.
Okay, so that's good news. There is a very clear and recently updated legal framework, because if it needs to be, of course, you think behavior that would have been tolerated widely in the workplace just 25 years ago would today hopefully be viewed as completely inappropriate. I think it's worth asking the question, what does the law view as sexual harassment? What does it look like? What form does it take?
So firstly, it is a form of unfair discrimination, which is strictly prohibited in terms of the Employment Equity Act. Our courts have also taken a very stern view on sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the Labour Appeal Court has characterized it as the most heinous misconduct plague in the workplace.
Wow. Okay, that's strong wording. Heinous plague of misconduct. Okay. It's not, though, limited to visible physical forms. I think probably most people would be able to envisage a definition which says, obviously, if someone was to walk up and touch you inappropriately or without being invited to, that would be deemed sexual harassment. But it goes much further than that, doesn't it, Samiksha?
Correct, it does. In fact, the Code of Good Practice for Dealing with Sexual Harassment sets out the test and the definition of sexual harassment. And sexual harassment is defined as unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature that violates the rights of an employee and constitutes a barrier to equity in the workplace, taking into account the following factors: whether sexual harassment is on a prohibited ground of sex or gender and or sexual orientation, whether the sexual conduct was unwelcomed, the nature and extent of sexual misconduct, and the impact of the conduct on the employee. And you've rightly pointed out that there are various forms of how sexual harassment can take place. Mm-hmm. It's either physical, verbal, or nonverbal conduct. And just to explain the different forms briefly, yep. Physical conduct may include unwelcome physical conduct ranging from touching to sexual assault and even to rape. Verbal conduct includes unwelcome innuendos, suggestions, hints, sexual advances, or comments with sexual overtones, sex-related jokes, inappropriate inquiries about somebody's sexual life, whistling in a sexual nature, and sending of electronic means or otherwise sexually explicit text. Mm-hmm. So that's if somebody sends you jokes or WhatsApps or emails, or it could be somebody making inappropriate comments of a sexual nature in conversation with you that could be and welcomed and make the person on the receiving end who we would refer to as the victim. I'll talk a bit about victim and perpetrator in this scenario. And then there's also the nonverbal conduct, which includes unwelcomed gestures, indecent exposure, and the display of sexually explicit pictures and objects. And that could be, again, in the form of emails. Most people communicate over WhatsApp these days. It could be either text or WhatsApp by sending certain photographs or images to the person where it is of a sexual nature and not welcomed conduct, which is also very important in terms of the definitions, in terms of what sexual harassment is. And it is the unwelcomed conduct of a sexual nature.
Does it have to happen more than once? Because I suppose you could make the argument for the possible scenario where somebody misreads someone's cues and could try and argue that I thought there was something, there was innocent flirting going on, and I took it to the next step and now I'm accused of sexual harassment. Does it have to happen more than once for someone to be able to lodge a claim? Or was the person on the receiving end going, you know what, I actually gave you no signals whatsoever that I was interested in anything of that sort from you, and I find this single approach or photograph that you've made offensive and inappropriate. Is that enough?
One offense or one incident is sufficient, as long as the victim or the recipient of this sexual harassment did not invite the behavior, made it clear that it was unwelcomed. He or she does have the right to report it to the relevant supervisor or your human resources department. And there's various ways in which you can deal with it, either on a formal basis or an informal. So you can also deal with it in circumstances where someone may have misread a situation. And then it's just simple enough to speak to the person and then discuss with them what is appropriate conduct and where the line should be drawn in terms of advances to other employees.
It's a minefield, though, and we know a lot of people are hesitant to say anything when it happens. Let's talk a little bit about why that is, Samiksha, because I saw a recent report, I think it was Columinate, who did a survey trying to get a sense of how widespread the issue was in South Africa, and the feedback was that nearly a third of South African women and just short of one in five South African men said that they had felt they'd experienced sexual harassment of some kind in the workplace, but only 16% of them had said anything or done anything about it, which is a shockingly low figure. Can we talk a little bit about why you think that is, that so few people do feel bold enough to speak up?
I think it is a problem where there may be insufficient training and knowledge by employers in organizations where people firstly understand what sexual harassment is and what their rights are in terms of lodging the complaints. There is also the circumstances where victims generally themselves tend to feel as if there's a level of blame or fault on their part. Embarrassment or anxiety as to why it had happened and what the potential circumstances are. And that's very much why our law is drafted in the way in which it is. It's to protect employees from any repercussions or victimization by lodging a case of sexual harassment against the perpetrator. So I think the more companies start training and educating all their employees, not just only about what your rights are in the event that sexual harassment takes place, but also to train and educate employees as to what is inappropriate behavior and how you can identify if certain conduct may constitute sexual harassment, and to help other employees also report these incidents if they become aware of it. Many cases, as you've read out the stats now, indicate that victims are hesitant to report cases. So it's also important that employees are aware of the processes in place, what is sexual harassment, and that they may also refer a complaint on behalf of a victim if the person is not willing to reveal their identity.
Okay. You mentioned at the start that code of conduct which exists in law and gives advice to employers on how to deal with this. Is that something which is legally enforceable, that all employers in South Africa are obliged to have in place and to follow?
It is a guideline. It's a code of good practice as to how to deal with sexual harassment in the workplace. However, the requirement comes in where employers must take steps actively to ensure they have the relevant policies and processes in place at the workplace in order to inform, train, and educate employees as to what sexual harassment is, as well as the clear rule that such conduct may not take place in the workplace. And it becomes crucially important when we look at a provision in the Employment Equity Act that deals with potential liability for employers if they fail to take any steps to eliminate sexual harassment in the workplace. And the ways in which you can take such steps is to ensure, firstly, that you have the relevant policy in place that deals with sexual harassment, and the Code of Good Practice would be your guiding document as to what the policy should outline, and the type of rules one should have, and guidance to employees who may be affected by sexual harassment so that they're aware as to the steps that they can follow and who they could report such incidents to. It should also offer advice and assistance to the employees and set out the disciplinary processes that may take place in the event that it is found there is an allegation of sexual harassment that has merit. So certain steps such as a zero tolerance approach to sexual harassment in the workplace informs employees that the company would take this seriously, and stern disciplinary action would be taken that may also result in dismissal of employees who are found guilty of sexual harassment.
And I'm going to say this anecdotally based on, if I look back over my own career, a company which has a policy like that in place, and I've worked for several that have had them, but that in practice didn't feel like they were implementing them, whereas I've worked for others where there has been immediate action taken with strong consequences. And the difference is the climate that it then creates in terms of who is prepared to report going forward. Because if the experience has been that I know two other women in this building came forward and laid complaints, and they ended up leaving the company, not the people that they were accusing, it keeps that door shut for other women to go, well, I'm not going to risk that. I don't want to lose my job, so I'm not going to say anything. Whereas if the opposite applies, where a company has been seen historically to act decisively, it creates an environment in which women, and again, I'm going to say men as well, because it is not only women who are on the receiving end of sexual harassment in the workplace, where they feel enabled to report. And here is an example. Sue on our WhatsApp line sending me the following message. Believe me, the whistleblower never wins. My daughter was at a work function for clients, and one of the senior staff members hit on one of her female clients inappropriately. My daughter took him aside and called him out for doing it, then reported him to her boss. But nothing was done about it, even though her boss did seem perturbed at the time and promised to do something. My daughter felt so let down and upset at the lack of support she received. She felt it was a boys' own club and they all protected each other. Other women who had had similar experiences with this man were scared to report him in case they were sidelined for promotions or kicked out of the company. Sue, I mean, I'm really sorry she had that experience, but I know she's not alone. As I've just said, there are so many environments where the policies may be there, but how they're implemented doesn't echo what they say. You mentioned earlier, if a company fails to act on a report like that or does then discriminate against somebody who filed a complaint, there are consequences potentially for the company in law, aren't there, Samiksha?
Correct. And again, in Sue's example, this is precisely why our law is quite detailed when dealing with issues of sexual harassment. And there's a plethora of case law as well where the courts have reinforced the law and the requirements upon employers. And very much part of the code of good practice as to the requirement to have the relevant policies in place, training and education, is so an employer must be able to show that it had the relevant policy in place, it had the processes that were detailed so that victims of sexual harassment are aware of their rights and what they can do if they are so affected, as well as to inform potential perpetrators of the consequences. If these steps are not taken, and more especially when a complaint is lodged of sexual harassment, employers are required to deal with it seriously and expeditiously to ensure that it identifies the incident and the merits of a sexual harassment case, and then take the appropriate steps to eliminate such conduct in the workplace. If employers fail to do so, then there is potential liability against employers where the victim of sexual harassment may lodge a damages claim against the company for failing to take the relevant steps to eliminate sexual harassment in the workplace and, in essence, failing to protect that employee from such conduct. So it's very serious, and it's therefore quite critical that employers have the relevant policies in place and take the steps and not just have, as you say, you know, a piece of paper that's not really adhered to, but that they are seen to be actively enforcing the policy, but then also seen to be acting in terms of the policy when complaints are lodged.
Okay. Has that happened in South Africa? Have there been cases like that where companies have been sued for liability in that kind of damages claim?
There have been various cases. In some instances, employers are able to show that they have taken the necessary steps. And if they have simply ignored it, then you have instances where damages are awarded in favor of the perpetrator against the company. And I'm sure no good company would want to have a reported judgment, or even if it's unreported, a judgment against it for damages for failing to protect employees. There are various cases, and we alluded to it earlier in terms of who may actually be a victim or a perpetrator.
Yes.
It's also important for people to know that it's not linked only to an employee and the employer, which you would look at traditionally, the manager and the subordinate. It can be a case where there are co-employees, or as well as third parties who do business with the company. So it can extend to third parties where the person's either a victim or a perpetrator, which still requires the company to take steps to prevent and protect the employee from sexual harassment.
That's really important. So a regular supplier of the company or somebody who's around the premises regularly would be included still as that being the responsibility of the employer to make sure your staff are protected from that person's conduct.
That's correct. There's there's a recent, about a year ago, a reported judgment in the Labour Appeal Court, which dealt with a similar situation where an employee of the third-party contractor company had reported a complaint against the employee of, and it's a reported judgment, it's Campbell Scientific, where at an out-of-office project, the person made certain advances towards the employee, and she felt quite uncomfortable, and it was unwelcomed innuendos of a sexual nature. And she had reported it to her company. When she went back to the office, they were on a project site in a rural area, and the company then took steps to investigate the complaint and proceeded with disciplinary action against the employee, and he was found guilty to have engaged in sexual harassment. So it's important to understand that even if you are in a work setting and dealing with somebody professionally on the basis of your engagement, that if they do step out of line, you can take relevant steps, and the employer of the perpetrator must still take the steps to ensure it eliminates sexual harassment in the workplace.
Really important to know. Now, it is something that I think everybody can do with further training on. Even if you've got policies in place, they're worth revisiting to check that your staff are aware of them, that everybody's clear on the reporting lines if they do want to raise a case, etc. Not every company can afford big independent private training, but some extra. Actually, Cliff Dekker-Hopmeyer has launched an e-learning module on sexual harassment, which is available for even a small business with a limited budget. Won't you just briefly tell us what that's about?
Yes, we're quite proud. It's a one-in-a-kind first module of e-learning dealing with sexual harassment. It's called A Better Place to Work. And it does utilize various examples. It's basic training. It spans about a 40-minute online module, which enables employers to educate their employees and implement consistent, comprehensive, effective training on sexual harassment in the workplace. So the model actually has various examples of the different forms of sexual harassment, so one can actually identify the type or the form of sexual harassment and understand then the steps to take. It may direct you to your policy and the details as to how you can report these incidents. And it's very useful where you might have several branch offices or have offices in different locations, because you don't actually have to spend the time physically going to those different branches. It's available online, and you can monitor and ensure that employees do take the test. And what's quite useful is that you have a certificate that is issued at the end of the course that an employee may have completed, mm-hmm. which would go onto the staff file. So if there's ever a complaint of sexual harassment, that's further evidence for the employer to utilize to state that this employee conducted the test, the online model, and has received the certificate. So he or she is aware of the policy, is aware of what constitutes sexual harassment, mm-hmm. and therefore ought to have known better in the circumstances. Yeah. And a bonus point is that it adds to your skills development points. So when you report to the Department of Labor on your employment equity reports, you can also indicate the points that you would have utilized for this training.
Right. So if you're interested in learning more or reaching out to Cliff Hofmeyer, the module is called A Better Place to Work. And you have been listening to the legal firm's Samiksha Singh, who's director in the employment practice at Cliff Hofmeyer. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon, Samiksha. Great to have you with us.
Great. Thank you so much, Pippa.
It's just past half